We know that words matter. This is especially the case with words on the way today from the Federal Reserve. From 8 p.m., I'm David Brancaccio coming to you from Philadelphia today. At the end of the Federal Reserve's two-day policy meeting, about 7 hours from now, the Oracle will speak. Fed Chair Janet Yellen will talk about where her team sees the economy going. Those comments will be scoured for hints about when interest rates will go up, this fall, a little later perhaps. This is a decision that will affect every woman, man, and child in America. Lindsay Piegza is the chief economist at Stifel Nicolaus. She says a key factor will be the state of the labor market and the number of new jobs added in a given month.
When we look at that on a three-month average, we're still talking about a pace of about 200,000, which is a significant step in the wrong direction from that elevated 324,000 pace at the end of last year. So it's really difficult to applaud a report that gets us back to where we were, only partially back to where we were, just 6 months prior.
And if rates do go up after Labor Day, how much might that hike be?
That's very much predicated on the continued reference by the Fed that they do have the expectation that the economy is going to be strong enough to withstand a rate increase in 2015. As we do know, the chairman herself has told us not to expect a rapid rate increase as we saw in 2004, but instead a very slow and steady increase that could take years to get us back to a new normal rate on the Fed funds.
The benchmark for interest rates, the 10-year Treasury yield, is down this morning to 2.32%. Let's do some more numbers. The FTSE 100 in London is down 0.5% with Greece and its debt still very much unresolved. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up. Are we experiencing a baby bounce in America? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is out with new stats this morning suggesting that after the Great Recession slowed down the birth rate in America, things are picking back up. My colleague Nova Safo looked into the numbers. How big a jump, Nova?
It's modest, to say the least, about a 1% rise in births last year. But the important thing here is the trend line. The CDC counts up the number of birth certificates, and the agency says we're finally seeing an increase for the first time since the recession hit in 2007. This could be because people who were delaying having children because their incomes were uncertain are now going ahead. We have seen steady job growth, so some people might be feeling more confident. The numbers seem to suggest this. The birth rate for women in their 30s is up 3%. Below 30s, it's largely unchanged. Experts had been predicting this. They'd yet to see it, though, raising fears that the birth rate may be down for a long while, like it was during the Great Depression. But now we're finally getting signs that the birth rate might be recovering along with the economy.
Nova, thank you. FedEx reports its fourth quarter profits today. Gigi Duban reports on FedEx's strategy for even more.
International shipping has not been great for FedEx, but Richard Armstrong, chairman of supply chain consultants Armstrong & Associates, says FedEx has a plan.
UPS and FedEx, frankly, have a duopoly in the U.S. market. They're probably going to build the same kind of thing in the European market.
Key, he says, will be FedEx's acquisition of TNT, a Dutch parcel delivery company. FedEx's share of the European market is small, but if it's approved by European regulators, the $4.8 billion deal could change that. Another game changer came in January when FedEx bought Genco, a company that's strong in warehousing and shipping returns. Arnold Maltz teaches supply chain management at Arizona State University. He says before, FedEx only handled transportation.
Having a remanufacturing or a returns processing capability in-house would give them a much better or much more complete product offering.
Maltz says FedEx taking in Genco, a successful high-margin operation, should also boost its bottom line. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is listener-supported. To keep our coverage relevant and compelling, please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from Newman's Own Foundation. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by June 30th. More than 90% of global trade floats in and out on a ship. The port of New York and New Jersey is the largest port complex on the East Coast, supports roughly 175,000 jobs in both states. In the latest this morning from our series on infrastructure called The Weak Link, Marketplace's Adam Allington reports the steep rise in cargo at ports is causing major backups for trucks and costly delays for companies.
Rafael Alvarez drives for National Container Freight in New Jersey. Like most guys who get into trucking, he likes to drive, which, as it turns out, is a shrinking part of the job these days.
Oh, man, this is a mess. Like, this is pretty much every day dealing with the same thing. It's getting worse.
Alvarez is sitting in a long line of trucks over a mile long waiting to pick up containers at the port of Newark.
Typical day, you get lucky, talk about like an hour and a half just to get in. Over there, inside, they say another hour and a half or two. Pretty much like you spend the whole day just trying to make it like a one move.
Spending 4 to 5 hours just to pick up one load is not good. It translates into fewer deliveries and increased costs. Tom Heimgartner is the CEO of Best Transportation, which operates over 100 trucks out of Newark.
You can't back a train into a loading dock, so we're the guy that delivers it the last mile. A lot of our customers are doing basically just-in-time kind of thing. They don't have large inventories, and when loads are late, it disrupts their whole supply chain.
Heimgartner blames the backup on more containers coming through the port and too few longshoremen to do the work. And unlike, say, airports, freeways, or even your local bank, the Port of New York and New Jersey doesn't operate on nights and weekends. But others say the backup isn't a manpower issue.
They can't change the geography of the region. They can't change the number of roads that go into the port and out of the port.
Jim McNamara is a spokesman for the International Longshoremen's Association. Unlike ports on the West Coast, he says New Jersey just doesn't have the space available to build out better port infrastructure.
You have a port in New York and New Jersey that's nestled between one of the largest airports in the country, Newark Liberty Airport, and also right alongside the New Jersey Turnpike.
McNamara says a better system for tracking and locating containers could help move trucks in and out faster, and over 650 new longshoremen have been hired since February. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Our infrastructure series is accumulating at marketplace.org. From WHYY in Philadelphia today, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.